WGR Sports Radio 550 presents.
You know what I don't like? When I get a Java chip frap and then I'm drinking it and there's a big chip that gets caught in the straw and I can't drink the rest of the Java chip frap. That's what I don't like.
Sports Talk Saturday.
I'm sorry, a what?
A Java chip frap. You don't know what a Java chip frap is?
No.
Oh my gosh.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
Talking Bills, talking Bears. Last time these two teams played in Orchard Park was 2002, a long time ago. Khalil Mack, will he play? He is questionable along with Allen Robinson. We know Josh Allen's not going to play. We are expecting Nathan Peterman to be under center for the Bills, but that is not official yet because Derek Anderson's still in the concussion protocol, so we'll see where that goes. Joining me now on the AT&T hotline to talk about it all, from New York Upstate, Matt Perino. Matt is on his first year covering the Bills on the Bills beat, and I've gotten to know him a little bit. He knows his stuff, and he's from Buffalo, and he does a great job. So thanks a lot for coming on WGR with me today, buddy.
Thank you, Sal. And I must say that everybody's made me feel very welcome on the beat, but you more than most. So thank you very much. You've been awesome.
I appreciate that a lot. When I say Nathan Peterman might start for the Bills tomorrow, or even Nathan Peterman will start for the Bills tomorrow, what goes through your head?
You know, I think the first thing is, you know, a little trepidation. I think most Bills fans, you know, have seen this play out over the course of his three starts now, and I don't know if they're necessarily looking for more of it. But I think from another perspective, as you start to think about it a little bit more, it's almost kind of interesting. I mean, us as journalists, we always talk about, you know, we chase the stories, right? Like, we want to see the best stories. And I think what would be a better story than a Nathan Peterman revival or resurgence? Not that he ever really was on the scene to begin with, but, you know, for him to finally go out there and make a few plays, maybe even win a game, I think – for us, you know, being in the locker room with this guy week in and week out, especially after the, you know, the two really rough spots he's had this year, it's kind of hard to watch. You know, I mean, he's maintained his composure and his even keeled nature. That's what everybody's talked about this week, coaches, teammates, and I think you respect that. But you know, after a while, it's almost like if you're a Bills fan, you think back to Scott Norwood when he missed that kick, and you know, then the documentary came out and people embraced him. I think that this is the same kind of thing. I wonder if Bills fans don't just want to throw their arms around this guy and say, listen, we're still here for you. We know things have been bad, but, you know, we're still going to support you. And that's what his team's doing, his coach is doing. And you kind of hope, just from a human perspective, that he can kind of get on track.
Yeah, it's interesting what you just brought up with the fans. You know, this is a very, very tough fan base. It's also a very loving fan base, as you know. And I think that if Nathan Peterman were to go out there and, you know, perform pretty adequately and give this team a chance to win, you'd see a lot of people flip pretty quickly, if you will, right, Matt? I mean, that's the way, you could call it fickle or whatever, but this is a fan base that will be pretty critical and pretty tough to deal with at times, but they'll give you more love than any other fan base when you're doing the right thing for their team.
Definitely. I mean, listen, this is a blue-collar town. I mean, right? That's what all of the, you know, promos say and the national spots when they cover the teams here. I mean, I remember a few years back with the Sabres, the Better Days promo. I mean, that's what these people are about. And they're like, they embrace their athletes. They embrace their teams. And I think Nathan Peterman, he's a guy that, you know, he's an embraceable kind of guy. He's not a guy out there causing trouble. I mean, he's a good dude, and he's had some struggles, and maybe he's not the best quarterback, but I think at 2-6 with Josh Allen, your future not available, I don't think it's a bad thing to kind of get up for a game like this to maybe see somebody, you know, exercise some demons.
There was a report a few weeks ago that if Sean McDermott had gone to Nathan Peterman, he might lose the locker room. What sense have you gotten from teammates and how they feel about their quarterback this week, Nathan Peterman?
It's funny you say that, because I mentioned something to Deion Dawkins on Wednesday, and he's always a very interesting, eclectic interview.
I agree. He is very interesting, isn't he?
Yes, and I brought it up, and he kind of looked at me as I was trying to make my way, plodding through the question, trying to get to the point, which was, you know, how are you guys going to do this again with him? And he looked at me like I had eight heads. I mean, everybody in that room, to a man, respects Nathan Peterman. I think they see the kind of work that he puts in. And that's what's really big that I've come to learn from covering an NFL team, is that I think the guys that are the most respected in this room are the guys that show up every day and put in the work and put in the extra work. Listen, Nathan Peterman's been on the practice field every day when everybody else was in the locker room working on things, talking to Brian Daboll before practice, trying to prepare for what they were going to do that day. And that's important. And he's doing all the things to try to be successful. And I think that's what teammates like. And Deion said, listen, we have his back. And even Terrell Pryor, in off the street, one of the first things he says is, we're going to make Nathan Peterman successful if he's the guy on Sunday. I mean, there is still a sense, even as bad as things have been this season, that they're going to find a way to get things going on offense.
You brought up Terrell Pryor, so let's stick with that. You know, what can we expect from him if he does play tomorrow? What would you expect from him as far as maybe limited number of snaps, how much play time, what kind of playbook would be available to him when he's actually out in the field?
Mm-hmm. I think that you're going to see a little bit more than probably most players that would come in on this kind of under these kind of circumstances, just because he's kind of been around a few teams. He's done this whole thing kind of getting up to speed with playbooks and whatnot. He said on his first day, in 24 hours, he already had, you know, first and second down on all the on the playbook already set. I think he's a guy that wants to prove himself. I read a really great piece by Tyler Dunn when the Bills signed Pryor. He did something with him in the offseason about how, you know, he wants to prove himself. This, he thinks that he's one of the best receivers in the league. He just needs a chance and the targets. And what better chance is he going to get to prove himself than right here? So I think that he's energetic. I think he's a guy that, what did he tell us? I can ball, bro. So we're going to see if he can ball. And while we're doing that, this could be a guy that, you know, could be a piece. I think I heard you say in the last few days that a guy that you've targeted the last couple off seasons that could potentially help the Bills. So I think we'll see more than expected. It's just, it'll depend on what he's able to do against a Chicago secondary that is playing pretty well and did a really good job against the Jets last week.
Yeah, he is a guy that really wanted the Bills to go out and get. But, you know, I kind of took a back seat to that after the year he was having and thought, okay, last year and then, you know, this year it wasn't looking good. And it didn't seem like he fit the kind of guy that they were going to bring in here. But this could be an 8-week audition, really, is what it amounts to. And to be honest, if he does really well, then they might not be able to re-sign him. He said he hit the open market. But this might be a, hey, does he fit here? We have 8 weeks to find out. And if so, maybe that gets a little bit of a jump start and fills a maybe slight hole that you already have to fill in the offseason and don't have to use another resource on it, Matt.
Definitely, 100%. And I think that, you know, this might be something that motivates that entire room. I mean, you have Zay Jones, who's really starting to develop, coming into his own, playing at a high level, and seems very confident. His confidence seems like it's at a season high. I talked to him this week for a little bit, and, you know, it seems like he's locked in. And I've been really impressed with Zay after watching from a distance last season as he struggled, and then all of the hoopla throughout training camp. He's kind of, the season started, he's been dialed in. I think that you kind of hope that bringing a guy like as talented as Pryor, that helps a young guy like him, and not even just him, but Kelvin Benjamin too, who at times has been kind of invisible.
Matt Parrino, New York Upstate, joining me here on the AT&T Hotline. So let's take a look, you know, future-wise, as we're going on here. Josh Allen, as he's recovering from this, what do you want to see from him, or do you even think he should be playing? If he gets healthy, assuming he can play and he's physically able to play, do you want to see him go in, Matt, as far as someone who's evaluating the team, and what are you looking for if you do?
I mean, I definitely think that, you know, if he's healthy, you definitely want to see him again this season. How much? I think that kind of depends on Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean. I mean, I think we got a glimpse of the kind of scary nature of, you know, injuring your rookie quarterback with what happened to him in Houston. And I don't think that you want to take too many chances, but at the same time, you know, I've maintained the fact that I think I've listened to a lot of experts when it comes to, you know, quarterbacks and developing them and should you wait and should you not. Who's to say that if Patrick Mahomes didn't play last season, he wouldn't have had the season he's having now. I mean, I think that you got to get these guys out there. You can't shield them from the NFL. It's a physical game, and I think Josh Allen embraces that. I think he loves that. That's one of the things I think that's impressed me the most about him is he definitely has that kind of competitive mindset that he wants to be out there, and he likes to be a little physical. So you're always going to have to worry about that with Josh Allen. So I think that the bigger concern is this offensive line, and then over the course of the next two or three games, if this offensive line isn't showing improvement, and they, and you know, it's been spotty. They played okay at times, and you know, but Josh Allen's been sacked like, you know, almost 20 times, if not that. So I think that if you're a fan base, it's going to be tough when you get to the December to get up for these games if you don't have at least Josh Allen to watch and to track his development as you move into a very, very important offseason in 2019.
No doubt. You said something interesting on the first part of your response. Who's to say that Patrick Mahomes would or wouldn't have the same season no matter how much he played last year? I agree. I think too many times, own personal opinion here is, Matt, people look at examples of, well, this guy played or this guy didn't. Every single situation is totally different. And I think in this situation, this kid needs to play. He came from Wyoming. Give him as many reps as he can to see how the speed of this game. Because to me, that's the biggest thing holding Josh Allen back right now is the speed of the game. It just seems like it's a little too fast for him.
100%. And I think that not only that, you're going to see, you know, he's your best option at quarterback. You could say what you want about Nathan Peterman and Matt Barkley and Derek Anderson, you know, they're not great quarterbacks. They're probably never going to be great quarterbacks. And this is a guy that Brandon Bean, Sean McDermott, and this organization has tabbed as a guy that has potential to be that, the highest drafted quarterback in, you know, the organization's history. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, he's got talent. So you want to get him out on the field so you give your fans a product to that they can get behind. I think that, like you said, there's going to be chances for him to develop. The more looks, the better. And, you know, it's a rough one. 2-6 going into the second half with a bunch of tough games still yet to play. You want a little bit of hope to get people excited.
On the defensive side, they finally, you know, started to come together after a slow start, obviously. They had a nice game again last week. I worry sometimes, you know, that you have one side of the ball that's so good, one side that's not. By the time you fix the one side that's not good, the other side isn't good anymore. I'm not too concerned about that right now. Where are you at with the defense long-term projections? Because obviously they're in a good spot right now, but where do you see this defense being by the time maybe they can fix the offense, Matt?
I'm not either. I'm totally on board with what you're saying there, because look at all the young pieces that they already have in place. I mean, you look at Tremaine Edmonds and Matt Milano on this linebacking unit. You're going to have them in place for the next 5 years. Then you look at the secondary, and you have one of the best young cornerbacks in the NFL. And Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer are both kind of like in their prime, right? You're probably still going to have another really a couple, two or three more years. So you add another cornerback on the other side. And then you look at this defensive line, Jerry Hughes, probably at the end of his prime. Trent Murphy, who knows, he has struggled to stay on the field. But a lot of youth on that interior with Harrison Phillips. And you're looking at potentially a top five pick in next year's draft. I was talking to Joe Marino of the Draft Network this week for a video that we're going to put out in New York Upstate. And he was talking to me about the fact that, you know, you are going to probably have to go defense if you're in the top five of this draft. And that might not be a problem, because you can maybe get a Nick Bosa or an Ed Oliver, guys that are, you know, anchors on that defensive line for the long term. And then you're looking at all three levels are really taken care of, especially with the emergence of Harrison Phillips in the middle as he develops. But yeah, I know it's. I agree with you there, because it is something that, you know, you do this piece by piece, and the way that Lorenzo Alexander has played, Kyle Williams have played this year, it's unbelievable, and it's hard. It's hard to see that sustainable for much past this season.
Yeah, you know, I'm not. Excuse me, I am not at all upset if they're at the top of the draft. I would rather see them take. If it's a defensive player who's the best player, take them instead of reaching for an offensive player. I know offense is more needy. I'm not naive to that, but I think that's how you get in trouble in drafts, as you reach for players. Take the best players you can. You can always get value for the other guys as you go through the draft, but if you're at the third or fourth or tenth spot and there's a bunch of great defensive players sitting there and you got to reach down to maybe, you know, the 15th or 16th best player to get an offensive guy, I'm okay with taking defense. I really am.
I totally agree, and part of me wonders if, you know, Brandon Bean, if you go back to that trade that he made with A.J. McCarron at the beginning of the season that a lot of people questioned, I'm almost wondering if that was a kind of like some down-the-line thinking when it comes to the fact that this draft is actually kind of chock full of talented wide receivers, and maybe not so much at the top end of the draft
right.
As this thing goes along, so adding those middle picks to kind of stock up on some skilled position players. You know, that's a good way to go about it.
Did you expect trades to be made at the deadline? And the fact that they didn't make any trades, what do you think about, you know, just not jumping in that market?
I'm not surprised that they didn't trade Kelvin Benjamin. I know a lot of fans were hoping for that, but
I was.
I think truly. Oh, you were.
Yeah, I thought Benjamin would get moved, or maybe last resort be released. I just thought they had enough of seeing that, and I thought that's when, to me, signing Terrell Pryor was a indication they were ready to move on from Kelvin. So it wasn't shocked that they didn't trade Kelvin. I actually did expect him to be moved, though.
Wow. See, one thing that I've noticed, and I might be way off base here, I still see Sean McDermott and Kelvin Benjamin, just in the limited amount of time that we have in practice, there seems to be a good relationship there.
I agree.
Think that these guys believe in him. And it may not have happened yet. We've seen little glimpses, especially in the preseason. I know people hate talking about the preseason. But, you know, the guy has done some things in this league. And I know it was a few years ago. So I think they still believe in him. And they're hoping that maybe they can get him on the cheap next year, since he isn't putting up the kind of numbers that he was probably hoping for in a contract year, so that could play into the situation. But I think that I was very surprised they didn't move LeSean McCoy. I think I hate to say it, I do think LeSean McCoy has lost a little bit of his step. There was one play in the New England Patriots game where he kind of got bogged down behind the line on a run to the weak side, and all of a sudden tried to, you know, turn it back upfield in old school Shady style and try to take it all the way back to the other sideline, and he just didn't have the burst. And I trust me, he's not playing behind a very great offensive line, and I think they're struggling even more in run blocking than pass blocking. You would be better with that, the X's and O's on that, than I would, but I don't know. I think LeSean, I'm wondering if they just couldn't get enough for him.
You know, it's funny. I'm opposite of you on that, too. I'm not surprised they didn't trade LeSean. I didn't expect them to. I wouldn't have been surprised either. But the reason for me is he's a different player. That name, what goes along with that, and I understand you're not making decisions based on marketing, right? But I think that there is an element to that with LeSean McCoy and being who he is in the face of the franchise, and he is a captain. And the other thing, Matt, for me is you do have him for one more year. I mean, if you're 2-6 at next year's deadline, see ya. Have a good rest of your career. We're going to get something for you. But the fact that, you know, he still has a year left in his contract, I think to me meant, you know, they're going to ride this out. They're going to try and improve and allow him to be here to try and see this thing through.
Mm-hmm. It's funny. We've talked about this thing all season long, ever since I got here, this off the field stuff that he's been dealing with. And I thought for myself, I agree with you. From a marketing perspective, there's a lot of 25 jerseys in that stadium, and it would hurt. But I'm almost wondering if I'm surprised they wouldn't want to just move away from this whole scenario. I mean, it's still kind of playing out.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a lawsuit now that LeSean McCoy is filing against the people that have filed against, stuff against him. So it's still kind of messy. And you just wonder, at 30 years old and at that number, which isn't crazy for, you know, a star running back, but you know, they have some talent. I think Chris Ivory's done a good job. They really like Marcus Murphy. And running backs, I feel like you can – it's a little bit easier to replace running backs if you can get another mid-round pick. But, you know, I agree. If LeSean McCoy is at LeSean McCoy's status, Josh Allen could use all the weapons he can get, especially if he comes back this year.
All great points about why they may have been able to move on, or could have maybe even should have, on LeSean McCoy. All good stuff all around, and we love having you on here, and I'll see you tomorrow at the stadium. Get a good night's rest. You get an extra hour tonight, Matt. How about that?
I'm so excited. My little girl's sick, so we're going to take advantage of that.
I hope she feels better.
Thanks, man. Thanks for having me on.
All right, no problem. Thank you, buddy.
Take care.
That is Matt Parrino. You can follow him at New York Upstate. You can see him, his stuff there at NewYorkUpstate.com. What is, Matt, I want to give his exact Twitter handle here. I should have let him do that himself and give you all the details, but I'll tell you where to find him, because he is really good. He's on his first year in the Bills beat, but he grew up here. He knows a lot about the team. He's at Matt Parrino, 2 hours, on Twitter. And you can follow him over at New York Upstate and at Bills Updates. And by the way, formerly covering the UFC. 803-0550, 888-550-2550. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll take your calls. And the dogs are barking. They barked last week. I gave you 3. I got 2 right. I'm 500 for the year. I'll take it at the midway point. I'm still looking for my first 3-0 week. Haven't had an 0-3 week. Not going to happen. Looking for my first 3-0 week. Hoping it's this week, and I'll give it to you when we come back on WGR.
Yeah, I want him to go out and play a good, solid game. We don't talk about leash, what if this, what if that. Go out and play his game.
That is Bills head coach Sean McDermott. Did you see the story about Matt Patricia and the reporter last week? What happened?
Yeah, like something about critiquing the guy for critiquing the reporter for like how he was sitting posture wise.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. So
when he looks like a discount Bill Belichick with the sloppiness.
You just like stole my bit, man.
Whoops.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, here's Miss Matt Patricia, who, I mean, last I checked, he doesn't look like he's going to a CEO convention. Okay, stepping up to a podium and criticizing a reporter for how he's dressed or how he's slouching in his chair. Who the heck are you? I mean, you want to criticize someone, you want to, you know, have some respect for the, what did he say? Respect for the process? Was that what it was? No. Respect for the...
it was the process.
The process?
Yeah, it was respect for the process.
Respect for the process. Right. How about you have some respect for the process? First year head coach. Maybe you're buckling a little bit there, Matty. They'll be in Buffalo. I think I should show up to his post-game press conference and just sit down or kneel down or something. Hey, what's up, coach? How you doing?
Just slouch the shoulders. Get real relaxed.
That week, media day during that week, Matt Patricia's going to be on the conference call. Hey, coach, just so you know, I'm asking this question while I'm sitting over here eating a bagel, slouching in my chair.
I got my feet kicked up.
What do you think about that, coach? That's what I should do. Yeah, Matt is used to winning over there with Bill. But like lots and lots of former Bill assistants, Bill Belichick assistants, he's not winning right now. They're 3-4. And they're playing a very tough Minnesota Vikings team tomorrow. Maybe worry a little bit more about that than... And like I said, hey, if this is a guy that showed up and... look like Tom Landry every time at a post game at a press conference and had a suit on, a fedora, looked really good. Maybe you could talk a little bit. Okay? But not when you look like you just came from LA Fitness playing a pickup basketball game. Sorry, doesn't work. How about you have a little respect for the process? Let's go to Chris. Hi, Chris, you're on WGR. What's up?
Hey, Sal, I just want to, you know, long-time listener, first-time caller, I just want to let you know I really enjoy your opinions and I really enjoy hearing you talk. So I just wanted to give you a little shout-out there.
I appreciate it. Thank you for calling.
Yes, sir. So if I had time to make a couple points, this Sunday, I think the Bills are going to win. I don't really have a good reason for it other than this team, you know, I know the team, and this just seems like one of those games that they're going to win. So I just, do you think that we got any shot?
Absolutely, I do. I don't think the Bears are world beaters. The Bills have struggled. Their offense is in a bad spot right now. They're facing a good defense, but this Bills defense can handle the Bears offense, and you could be looking at another Tennessee Titans type of game.
Exactly what I thought. And so I just wanted to give a little opinion about the draft, and it stinks that we're talking about the draft already. But I agree with you that if we're up high, we have to take the best player. But I do think that we should trade down to about 15 or 16. And I think if we trade that first-round pick, we could trade back to 15, 16, get a second-round pick for this year, draft a lineman at around mid-draft in the first round, and then go and get our homegrown player, Anthony Johnson, in the very early second round, and then maybe focus more on the defense. But I really hope that we really keep the process on offensive talent. And I just had one more question for you, and then I'll hang up and listen. Do you think that with how the offense is, are you at all worried in Brandon Bean's evaluation for offensive talent? Does it scare you at all? Because it makes me a little nervous that Kelvin Benjamin and Nathan Peterman are kind of the two names that stick out for their scheme that they brought in. So I just wanted to know if you think or if you're worried about their...
Well, yeah, but Nathan Peterman wasn't brought in by Brandon Bean. He wasn't here yet.
Yes, sir. Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean in the same conversation. I apologize.
Right, but to me it's incomplete. The answer to your question is I don't know, Chris, because it's incomplete. I'm not trying to cop out, but Brandon Bean's been here
You know, he got here after last draft. He's had one draft. He's had one free agency, basically, here in Buffalo. So I don't know. And if you're just guessing on Sean McDermott, well, he had one good draft when he was here. I think a pretty good draft so far. Tre'Davious White, Matt Milano, Deion Dawkins. We'll see about Zay Jones. He's starting to trend in the right way. And then last year doesn't look like that draft class yet. You know, there's a lot to be determined still. Tremaine Edmonds, I love. We'll see about Josh Allen. It's all about Josh Allen. Look, anybody, any question at all about this organization, this front office's ability to evaluate talent hinges on one player, and that's Josh Allen. Does he become good? If he's good, we're all going to give him great grades. If not, we're not. That's it. It's as simple as that. Jerry and Kenmore, what's up, Jerry?
Hey, Sal, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. You know what, I called you a couple weeks ago on a Monday, and I had like a get off my lawn, you know, kind of.
I remember.
Yeah, you know, Matt Patricia's another one of those guys that's get off my lawn.
Yeah.
You know, this is going to be harsh, but if you're over the age of 20 and you're not a catcher, wear your hat forward. It's always fat guys that wear their hat backwards.
Oh, my God.
It just makes you look fatter. You know, be an adult. Wear your hat forward. So he has nothing to do. Get off my lawn.
You know you call WGR, not WBEN, right, Jerry?
I know, but get off.
Okay, just making sure. All right.
My lawn.
Okay, buddy.
My lawn moment with Matt Patricia. Yeah.
What else you got? Let's move on.
All right. I think he's going to have a good game tomorrow. I think he can be a serviceable backup quarterback in this league. You know, he's a smart guy. He, I think one of the things that happens, you know, this in any game, confidence is so huge in any game you play. And maybe it just takes a couple of good plays or a couple of good quarters to really solidify, you know, the confidence in this. Although I strongly disagree with the way this team has been built. They, you know, I agree that Josh Allen is the key to all of this, but this is a pro golfer that you've given a 5-iron and said, go out there and shoot 72 today, and he doesn't shoot 72, or any of these guys can with that 5-iron. There's no tools on offense.
So far, that's right. But, I mean, it is early. It's his first year, and they do have a ton of resources that they knew they'd be behind the eight ball. I agree with you. They made mistakes, but I am willing to give this one offseason where they will have a ton of money and a bunch of draft picks.
But the problem is you can probably offensive line will be the easiest thing to fix with money. Skill position players, I mean, David Funchess is the best available free agent.
I don't agree with that. Terrell, what does he got? Terrell Williams is out there from the Chargers. Golden Tate is out there. There are Quincy Enunwa, I think, is a nice player. I think there are guys that are those Robert Woods types players from a couple of years ago that the Bills had that they let go. I think those are the guys that they're not the big names, but they can be really good for you.
You might be right, but we do need two or three of them.
Yep, that's right. That's right. And maybe you can get one in the draft. Maybe you could trade for one. There's always avenues. It's not easy, Drew. I'm not telling you. You're right about that. I do think, though, that they have at least the saving grace is they do have the resources and the wherewithal and ability to do it if it is there.
Yeah, I agree. I don't want to hear next year that we're building.
This totally right.
This needs to be at least.
This team needs to win next year. For Sean McDermott, they need to win. For Brandon Bean, even, they need to win. I hate to cut you off, Jerry, but I got to go because I got to hear the dogs. I got to have the dogs barking. It's time for this week's 3-Dog Saturday. Last week, I went 2-1. I gave you the Carolina Panthers. They won on the field. They were getting 3 against the Ravens. I gave you the Denver Broncos plus 9.5. They only lost by a touchdown against Kansas City. And then I lost with the Browns plus 8. I was 2-1. I'm 12-12 overall. After 8 weeks, I will take that. Here we go for this week. All right. I really do hate taking the Pittsburgh Steelers because I'm not a big Pittsburgh guy right now. I still think they're doing it just on offense and then the defense isn't that good. But here's the thing. I'm going to take them this week. It's more about the Baltimore Ravens than it is about the Pittsburgh Steelers. Pittsburgh's getting 3 points at Baltimore. Baltimore beat them by a couple touchdowns last time they played. But the Ravens right now, their defense is just not good. They have given up 60 points over their last two games, and these two teams generally always play close games. The Steelers are getting 3 points at the Ravens, and the way that offense is humming, and the way the Ravens' defense is not, I'm going to take the extra 3 points, take the Steelers plus 3 at the Baltimore Ravens. And you know who's won 6 games in a row? Can you believe it? The Houston Texans have won 6 games in a row after losing their first three. Their first two, excuse me. The Denver Broncos have lost 5 of their last 6. So you got one team that's 6-0, one team that's 1-5 in each of their last 6, and the team that's 6-0 is getting a point. That's the Houston Texans. And they have a receiver from the other team they just got last week.
who kind of know some of the audibles and the calls are going to help out, know some of the personnel. That's not like the reason to take the Houston Texans, but I'm still going to take the Houston Texans thinking maybe even Demaryius Thomas can help a little bit beside the fact that they are 6-0 in their last six. Denver is 1-5 in their last six. Both Denver Broncos are reeling. Houston's feeling it. They're going to Denver. They have way more talent right now on offense than Denver does. I'm going to take the Houston Texans and that talent on offense, getting a point at the Denver Broncos. And then I'm going to Monday night. Both teams coming off a bye, the Tennessee Titans and the Dallas Cowboys. Dallas is not a good home favorite. They're just not. They don't cover. Go check the history of the last, whatever, 10 years, maybe 15 years. They don't cover a lot as a home favorite. And they're giving up 5.5 to Tennessee. I don't love either team. Probably a low-scoring game. Both teams coming off a bye. So you're going to have a little extra prep time for both. I think it's a tight game. And if you're going to give me 5.5 points in a tight game with a team that generally doesn't cover as a home favorite, I'll take it. The Tennessee Titans have lost 3 in a row, two of them, including the Bills, only by 1 point. So I'm going to take the Tennessee Titans plus 5.5. I think that, to me, is too big of a number at Dallas. They probably lose by 2, 3, maybe 4 points. So here you go. This week, Steelers plus 3 at Baltimore, Texans plus 1 at Denver, Titans plus 5.5 Monday night at the Dallas Cowboys. Brian Cozio up next. We're going to preview Sabres, Senators. He's down at the arena. Puck drop. That would be funny. At 2 p.m. here on WGR.
It's obviously frustrating. You want to contribute and help the team win and help the team get on the board. I think it's more important to stick to my game and my work ethic and create opportunities. I think sometimes you get a lot of chances and you're not scoring. I think I'm going through a little bit of a slump right now, but I think one game can change all that.
Connor Sherry of the Sabres, they take on the Ottawa Senators today at 2 p.m. We'll have pregame for you coming up right here in about 10 minutes on WGR Sports Radio 550. Let's go to Brian Cozio right now, who's standing by. Down at the arena at the KeyBank Center, and the Sabres and the Senators get going here at 2 p.m. What's going on, Brian? I don't think we've talked a while here on the program. It's good to have afternoon hockey back downtown.
It is. We've got it back-to-back Saturdays here. 2 o'clock today, Ottawa, and then next Saturday against Vancouver. And, in fact, there's quite a bit of afternoon Sabre games this year on Saturdays. We've got another one coming up in December, 2 in February. I know that people have strong opinions on whether or not they like the afternoon weekend games or not. And if you have family or kids, you probably like this. And if you go with a bunch of buddies and maybe you're not a mom or a dad that has a son or a daughter that loves to go to Sabre games, then you probably don't like it. But the Sabres are trending in this direction. And I remember back a regime or two ago that the hockey people actually thought that playing afternoon games at times could give them an advantage. The Bruins and the Flyers, partially just due to their arena being used by NBA teams as well, they played a lot of afternoon games. But when you catch a West Coast team playing in an afternoon game, that's a morning time for them with the time zone change, and they thought maybe it could give them a little edge. And I know that the Sabres hockey department have discussed this in the past, beyond just the marketing reasons of playing an afternoon game. But my long-winded answer is to you, yes, it's an afternoon game, and I kind of like it just because it's different.
And this team has been playing better, notwithstanding the last game where they went to Ottawa and did not play well in the first two periods, came on in the last period, of course, the third period. They did some nice things there. The comeback was a little bit short, but it's nice to have a team also that is a little bit more exciting and maybe starting to win some games at least a little bit in the standings. So far, that's where they are.
Yeah, and I think that the negative of the last few games, at the very least, in all these games, probably in last year's team and of years previous, some of these comebacks that they had that allowed them to get the game to overtime, that ultimately, yes, you know, you're disappointed that they don't finish it off and get the second point, but you're down 2 heading to the third in Columbus, and they come back and they force OT. I mean, that probably wouldn't have happened in years past. So I feel like that it's both sides. Fans can be more annoyed saying, hey, I see this team, they're capable of more this year. So the fact that maybe they don't come ready to play right away, or we hear some of the same things that we've heard in years past about playing for 60 minutes and coming prepared to play from the start and all that sort of stuff, I get why that's more annoying this year. But at the same time, I think you should look at the positive and say, look, they are capable of better things, and at times it is on display. That third period the other night in Ottawa was excellent. The problem is it followed up two kind of clunker performances in the previous two periods in which they found themselves in a 3-0 hole, and ultimately they ran out of time in terms of coming back. So it's an up-and-down month so far here to start the season, but record-wise, I know that you throw in the November loss here the other night, but they finished October 6-4-2. And if they go 6-4-2 every month, that puts them in the playoffs, which every single Saber fan would be happy with.
Brian Cozio here down at the arena, Sabres and Senators at 2 p.m. here on WGR. What do you think of when you hear Nathan Peterman will most likely start tomorrow for the Bills against the Bears?
I think I feel like I'm beyond with the team, and this is not a Peterman issue of worrying about how it affects a win or a loss, because I just think at this point this team is in such flux that getting bothered about whether they win or lose is just not part of kind of what I'm watching for anymore. Personally, I'm rooting for Peterman to do well. I know that might be an unpopular decision, but from hearing everything that you say and others say that are around the team a lot, he seems to be well-liked and supported by his teammates, even through these rough stretches that he's had. So I'm rooting for him to do well. I think, unfortunately, at times, he, along with some of the other QBs, they've been put in a tough spot by this organization. They've been put in front of an inferior offensive line, in front of a receiving core that is one of the worst in the league. And I think for young quarterbacks, let's forget Nathan Peterman is still very young and learning, that it's tough, whether it's him or Josh Allen or even Derek Anderson coming in rusty from not playing. These QBs are not putting in the ripest of spots, and that's one thing that I feel like is tough on them. Now, they haven't played well either at times either. I mean, look what San Francisco's quarterback did the other night, Nick Mullins, again, with not an outstanding supporting cast either. But I also don't think that you're coming in here saying, all right, well, the tools are around you. You know, you're in a spot to succeed well. I think it's anything but that. I think not only do they have a lot to overcome with the other 10 people on the field, but, of course, themselves, they haven't played well beyond that, the quarterbacks themselves.
All right, you sent me your three dogs here. I'm going to go over them, all right? I'm going to hold you to this. Sent me your three dogs. What do we got here? Now, you heard mine. I don't know if you did hear mine, but you were probably walking into the arena.
I got to hear what you had. Do we have any repeats?
Yes, we both have the Texans.
All right.
We both have the Texans. Six in a row they've won. Denver has lost 5 of 6. They get Demaryius Thomas over there. I think Denver is just in a bad spot right now, and they're searching for themselves, whereas Houston, they're not great. They're not world beaters, but they should be able to handle Denver, I think. My other two, I don't like taking the Steelers because I'm not big on them, but the Ravens defense has not been good lately and the Steelers offense is humming. So I'll take the 3 points with the Steelers in that one. And the last one is, believe it or not, I like the Tennessee Titans getting 5.5 Monday night at Dallas, because Dallas is never a good home favorite, and it's 5.5 on a close game, I think. So I'll take that.
Yeah.
All right. Yours.
I like those.
You got Tampa plus 6.5. Ryan Fitzpatrick, huh?
Yeah. I mean, I think that they playing in Cincinnati is a harder spot than maybe in Carolina. I think that Tampa with Fitzpatrick at the very least is scoring. I'm not that regardless of who's been under center, they're not playing any defense, but I think they're scoring. So I think that they'll keep it within a touchdown and, you know, even maybe have a chance to win that game. I think with Fitzpatrick, they seem to play well rallying wise. I still cannot convince myself that the Redskins are any good. I know that their record says that they are. I look at Atlanta and maybe I am sucked into the fact that I think their roster still is more talented than Washington. So I have Atlanta, I think, as a dog winning plus 2, and then I agree with you on Houston.
Yeah, I like, you know what? People don't realize Redskins are actually not a bad team, and they have a quarterback that's probably pretty much not going to screw it up. So I like Washington, but so I'm not going to take Atlanta. I understand why you would in this case, but I think you're right. People don't really kind of give Washington credit, and maybe I'm giving them a little too much. That's a pretty interesting team over there. Atlanta's been so banged up, too, this year on defense. Their defense is so bad, and it's been banged up, to be honest, beyond that as well.
Yeah, Alex Smith is not even really putting up amazing numbers. I mean, remember last year with Kansas City and even the year before, how he was lighting it up all of a sudden when they asked him to open it up. And now it seems as though he's asked to kind of play that brand of football that you described, just don't screw it up.
Yep.
And it's working for them, and their defense is playing good, the Redskins are, so it's a good combination. Smith is not going to go down as the best quarterback in the draft because he was taken first overall. Some would maybe even view him as disappointing because, of course, Aaron Rodgers went in that same draft. I think that was 05, but he's had a pretty good career now. If you you know, if he continues to, if he gets Washington a division title here in his first year, I think that's pretty impressive. And I know he was taken first overall, so you expect Hall of Fame when you take a quarterback then. But he's I think he's done pretty well for himself over the course of the career. That didn't start out very well. Remember, of course, he lost his job to Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco there. So, but I think, you know, KC, he's obviously thrived, and maybe he'll have a strong finish with his career in Washington.
All right, what do we got coming up on the pregame?
Well, Pat Mellicaro is going to join me here in just a few minutes. We're going to kind of break down the first month that was here. And, you know, as I said, record-wise, they're doing pretty well. I think that this playoff discussion, it's still early, but Pat and I are going to talk about it anyway, because it's fun to look at the standings where the Sabres are now and not have them be in the bottom. They did not put themselves in the hole that they normally do in October. So we'll talk about that a little bit here. It's a busy Saturday in the league, so we'll kind of go through some of the other headlines. And, of course, we have our normal player interviews Paul Hamilton has for us, and we'll hear from Phil Housley. And Linus Allmark is in, so Pat and I also are going to kind of talk about whether Phil Housley's handling the goaltender rotation right. So far, Hutton has played 10 games, Allmark 3. And I know that I've been getting some tweets about the fact that fans would like to see Allmark more, so Pat and I will break that down too.
All right, that is Brian Colziel. He'll be along for Sabres pregame here. We'll pass it over to him, and then the Sabres are going to pass the puck around at the KeyBank Center against the Ottawa Senators. Have a great broadcast and pregame show, and we'll talk to you later, bud.
Thanks, Al.
All right, that is Brian Colziel. Thank you very much to Derek Kramer. Great job producing. Thanks to Matt Perino and Paul Hamilton. Sabres, Senators, Paul William Bell's pregame show up next on WGR.